This is KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. Go Cyclones!
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And hello to you, the listener. I'm your host today, Jim Werbel. Today's show focuses on business topics and events in the city of Ames. As I have mentioned, I am trying to increase business coverage news in the city of Ames. I think today's show will highlight how community interests and business interests can both be aligned. One way they can be aligned is in job creation. We have two segments that deal with that issue. I begin with Dan Culhane and Angie Dorenkamp from the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We'll talk about workinames.com, a job posting website for our listening area. Then we have employees from Sigler Companies and its president, Beth Cross, talking about work at Sigler. Another way that business and community interests can be aligned is urban development or redevelopment. We'll be talking to John Lott, who is the owner of an architectural firm in Ames and the owner of the Sheldon Munn Building on Main Street, about a grant he recently received to update an important historical building that has fallen on hard times and needs redevelopment. I'm excited about sharing some of our guests with you today. Start the show, I have Dan Culhane and Angie Dorenkamp, who will be talking about workinames.com, which is a job posting board that the Ames Chamber of Commerce has developed. I'd like to welcome Dan Culhane back to the show, who is the president and CEO of the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back, Dan.
Hi, Jim. How are you today?
Great. I see you got a guest with us.
Who's the guest? I'm pleased to have Angie Dorenkamp here today with me. She's our new Director of Workforce Solutions at the Ames Chamber of Commerce and Ames Economic Development Commission.
Angie, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Tell me what you're doing for the Ames Chamber of Commerce.
I am focusing on workforce solutions for Ames and Story County area.
What's a workforce solution?
Has anything to do with employment opportunities, businesses, people looking for jobs in this area.
Are you trying to help match the employers' needs with job seekers' needs?
Yes, absolutely.
I know you're new on the job, but tell me, what are some of the things that you're trying to do?
I'm trying to develop a few different programs. One is just a promotion of workforce in the Ames area, letting people know that there are great quality jobs in this area that they should consider. Another thing that I'm working on is putting together students with industry so that they are aware of what unique opportunities lie here in the Ames area.
One of the things that we're pretty excited about is that Angie mentioned connecting students to industries. We think there's a real opportunity that we haven't tapped yet, and that is reaching out into the K-12 system in Story County to introduce a wide variety of employment opportunities that exist here in Ames and Story County to students at an earlier age. That doesn't mean they should delay future education plans, but they should be aware of the types of meaningful employment opportunities that are here where they live right now.
You're saying there's a lot of talented people who, for whatever reason, look for work outside of Ames, and you're saying maybe you should consider staying in Ames.
You know, we joke that it wasn't up until a few years ago that we realized that there was thousands of students just at Iowa State University that graduate every year, and they're racing off to Interstate 35 to head north or south to get their first employment opportunity. And so our goal with our Workforce Solutions program in its totality is to really slow those people down and say, if you want to stay, there are meaningful employment opportunities here. Right now, workinames.com has over 1,300 available jobs in Ames and Story County.
Give me an example of some of the jobs that are listed, just a small example.
You know, it can be anything from a lab technician at a company in the research park to a service job at one of our fast food restaurants. But it's not just one sector. It's across the board. You'll see a number of positions, administrative assistant positions at Iowa State University. You'll see
I saw an associate professor position.
There you go, Jim. You know, maybe you can get that
job. I might go back to work again.
Maybe you should. So it's across the board. It isn't just one sector of the economy. It's a research park. It's manufacturing. It's ag production. It's chemical production. It's education, et cetera, et cetera.
We've had different shows in the past that have highlighted this. We've interviewed McFarland, and they have problems recruiting some physicians, that there's some shortage areas. Craig Tools, and they do advanced technology, and they're having difficulties trying to find people. What are you going to do to help this process so that employers in central Iowa can thrive?
Well, that's really the goal of the comprehensive plan we've assembled for this. And when there's really four parts to it. The first one is we continue to showcase those employment opportunities at the career fairs at Iowa State University, the University of Northern Iowa, and the University of Iowa. We think that's a good place to start. At the same time, we've engaged Home Base Iowa, which is an initiative by Governor Brands that was passed in May of 2014 to bring veterans back to our state to work in our companies. And so we are a registered county of Home Base Iowa. Secondly, we've got this website I mentioned a moment ago, workinames.com. We think that's a reasonable database. It's a reasonable location for people to find jobs if they're seeking work in Ames and Story County. The third piece that we're really excited about, we've done this for about 3 years, is a program called See Yourself in Ames. And it's really focused on college students that are interning at local companies over the course of the summer. We bring them together four or five times over the course of the summer, provide dinner and maybe a bit of entertainment or educational opportunities. And we try to introduce them to what life might be like in Ames and Story County after school. The final piece that's really undeveloped, and I think that's where Angie's really going to help us move this forward, is we're looking at a concierge program where McFarland Clinic is hiring a physician or a higher level executive is coming to town. I think it's refreshing for that person, that candidate, to have a different perspective on the community. And that's where our businesses or organizations here in Ames and Story County would engage our staff, Angie and others, to provide a different perspective, maybe a community tour, maybe we take that person to lunch and give them a different perspective rather than what they've been hearing from during their time with that prospective employer.
You've got your hands full, Angie. That sounds like an 80-hour a week job.
It's an exciting opportunity for me. I'm ready to hit the ground running and get going with it.
So you came from what's your background?
I have a background in human resources and recruitment for a manufacturing company here in Iowa. So I understand what it's like to try and find the right person, the right people.
Let's talk about Work in Ames a little bit. How do people get access to it and how does it operate?
Well, like Dan said, the workinames.com is a great place to start. Like I said, 1,300 jobs available right now. You can contact the chamber. You can contact me directly. However we can help somebody find the opportunity that they're looking for.
Can employers and both job seekers post anything on workinames.com?
Right now, employers can post their jobs on Workforce in Ames. There's no fee or no cost associated with that. They can go on, post their own jobs on there and, you know.
The job requirements?
Yep. Contact person, job requirements, you know, how a person goes about applying for that position. And that gets it out there in front of hopefully a lot of Story County area.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, our website is set up, Jim, so that it sweeps the internet. And so I am way out on a very thin limb right now because I am not well versed in technology by any stretch. Yet, as I'm told, it sweeps the internet for jobs that have Ames, Huxley, Nevada, Story County, maybe Boone. If those names are in those titles, it'll sweep those jobs and pull and capture those and bring those into our site.
So this would be really great for people. Maybe a trailing spouse who's being offered a job in Ames. that they are looking for a job, what's available for me that this would be really great for them? How do you get somebody from Des Moines to use Workforce and Ames.com?
That's the challenge, Jim, and that's where the evolution of WorkinAmes.com is really where we're at this point in time. A lot of people, even in Story County, don't know there's a job website called www.workinames.com. And so it's incumbent upon us to get that message out, to promote that. Because at the end of the day, these national search engines or national career builder and people like that, they're trying to place people anywhere.
Anywhere.
We're kind of being homers here. We want them to work here. We want them to work in Story County. And so it's all about Ames and Story County. And
when you are encouraging others to come to Ames, maybe you're doing a recruitment at University of Iowa or UNI, what are you going to try to do to promote Ames? What are your ideas?
Those are some things that I'm trying to develop right now, is how do we make Ames and Story County attractive to students outside of the Iowa State University campus? And so I think education for those students on what businesses are there in Ames.
We'll be having Sigler on shortly. I was surprised at how diverse Sigler has become. It's much more than a printing company. It's really a marketing and branding company. They have a lot of need for not only technical people how to do communications and printing, but there's also demand for people doing relationship marketing.
Yes. Well, they're like most companies, I think, anymore, Jim. These companies continue to diversify themselves and evolve. And as a result, they require a wide variety of skill sets to operate their businesses in proper fashion.
You'll hear a little bit about what Beth Cross is doing in terms of trying to make Sigler a preferred employer for people to come to. You'll find out that later on the show if you'll stay tuned. What do employers need to do to convince job seekers to come to Ames rather than to going someplace that some people would consider more exciting, like Minneapolis or Kansas City?
Right. You know, I think our employers do their part by providing pretty significant employment opportunities. It's incumbent upon the community, whether it's the Ames community or Huxley or whatever community here in Story County, to make itself inviting and attractive. So while we work on from an economic development standpoint on helping companies create jobs, we also need to be mindful of the community development amenities that are critically important to livability, whether it's dog parks, aquatic centers, bike trails, all the things that we, for the most part, have here in Ames and Story County, continuing to build upon those things. Because if you're a really bright, talented software engineer, you have lots of options on where you can go to work. It really comes down to, well, where do I want to live? And so from a livability standpoint, we need to continue as a community, not just a chamber or one group or another, but collectively work on making Ames and our surrounding communities in Story County vibrant places to live, where people want to live and raise their families or get a loft apartment and live in downtown Ames and go to the farmer's market on Saturday, whatever it might be. And if they say yes to living here, there's a good chance they'll take a job at one of our companies, and our companies need that help.
We've been talking to Dan Culhane from the Ames Chamber of Commerce and Angie Dorenkamp, who is working on workforce development in the city of Ames with the Chamber of Commerce. Any final comments to make?
Yeah, I think the underlying factor here is that we need to create more awareness about employment opportunities that are here. You mentioned Craig Toole earlier in the program here, Jim. We've got great companies, large and small, that are looking for people that are willing to work. The one thing I would also mention about Workforce Solutions, which is critically important to us, is that this isn't just an Ames and Story County problem. This is a problem across the country. Economic development organizations and chambers in communities and companies are struggling to find enough people to fill the jobs. And so we see our efforts not as a silver bullet that's going to solve the problem. We see our efforts as a way to augment what our private companies are already doing for themselves.
Angie, what do you hope to achieve in the next 3 months?
awareness, like Dan said. Just making everybody aware, you know, whether it's the industry and the businesses aware that I'm here and available for them to use and access however I can help them, whether it's, you know, students in the area who wonder about what opportunities they might have if they wanted to stay here or...
I'd like to thank both of you for coming to the show and tell us about what companies are trying to do to create good jobs for lots of people in the city of Ames and Storey County.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI 89.1 FM, serving Ames and Storey City. Today's show is focusing on different business topics that are related to community interest. John Lott, an architect who also owns the Sheldon Munn Building, will be talking to us about the history of the building, its importance to the Main Street community, and his ideas about redeveloping a building that has fallen on hard times. Welcome to the show, John.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, John and I know each other from lots of situations.
You bet. You bet.
So it's good to have him on the show. I've only been in Ames for 20 years. Sheldon Munn Building's been around for a long time. The Sheldon Munn Building really seems to have been a bit of an eyesore since I've come to Ames 20 years ago. I've learned that has not always been the case at all. Tell me about the history.
Well, it's kind of interesting to really talk about this because as most people's experience with the Sheldon Munn, they just notice it as a very big building on Main Street. It is the largest building on Main Street, four stories tall. What most people don't realize that inside of its doors is over 66,000 square feet, mainly of residential apartments and then some commercial spaces on the main floor. This is, I've coined the term, I like to call it the largest and most invisible building we have in town.
It wasn't always that way.
No, it wasn't at all.
I heard once upon a time people have told me, I've been talking about the story, and they said, it was one of the places to eat in Ames.
It really was. The building was designed in 1915 and under construction in 1915 with its opening early in 16. And in 1915, the idea that Parley Shelton and H.O. Munn had was they were going to put Ames on the map. And so they designed this using the architecture firm Proudfoot and Bird out of Des Moines. The most known firm at that time. The resulting design was a building that was considered to be the most dominant feature in the whole Midwest as far as a place to stay, a place to come to eat, etc. The original building had a 5-star rating in between Chicago and Denver. That was the only place to come to stay.
So it was kind of like what we've seen the Pati and Perry.
That was the intent all along, of course. And you have to look at its relationship in history. 1915, this was before a lot of the more public spaces on the Iowa State College campus was available, so that a lot of the functions, the Dinky was still coming back and forth between Iowa State and downtown Ames. A lot of the student fraternities, etc., still really existed downtown Ames, and so there was a lot more traffic back and forth walking along, and this was a place that anyone who were visiting the university would come and stay, or any business person that would come to Ames, this was the place to stay. So it turned out to be, you know, as some of the writings that Farwell Brown had dug up and such, this was a place where everyone would come and have their party, their dedications, their weddings. This was designed to have it a fourth floor ballroom.
Oh,
clear across the north end of the building, so that a lot of the major functions that the college had would come and actually have them at the Sheldon Munn.
Interesting. So, when did it stop being a hotel?
We've dug through the writings that we can find inside the Historical Society, etc. But I did find, when we started working on the building, we found a treasure trove of old stack of drawings in the basement. And we've dug through there and really have been able to kind of piece together what we think is a bit of a history. The idea of a fourth floor ballroom is a wonderful setting. People loved it, etc. But it must not have paid for itself for very long, because from what I can tell, back in the mid to late 1930s, that space was redesigned for apartments, and it was actually remodeled to put into the apartments like the rest of the building at that time. And it was really more than 15 or 20 years before several of the individual rooms. And you have to remember, when this building was originally designed, these were motel rooms. And of the day, that was not unheard of to have just a single room. By the time, 1915, the original building was built, the addition that was to the west end, if you look at it, it's not mm-hmm. symmetrical. There's a sizable addition on the west side built in 1927. Putting those two together, there were 112 hotel rooms in the building, which was quite a number of rooms. But they were simple and they were small. The patron would come to the place. They would stay in their room. They had heat, of course, because mm-hmm. of steam radiator, but that, if you wanted cooling, you open the window. If you wanted a bathroom, you go down to the end of the hall.
Okay, it was pretty
simple place. But that was the culture of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody expected that. It was still considered a fine place to stay.
I can see how it needed remodeling after a period of time, given that, because it didn't match the newer standards that emerged in the 50s.
Right. And as it began to evolve, and we like to talk about how buildings evolve over time. There isn't any single building you can point to downtown or anywhere in town that has lasted 100 years and not talk about how it's evolved. Mm-hmm. It's changed. This building, of course, remodeled over time. People would say, I want to have an apartment instead of a couple of rooms. And so we've got a design back in the 40s when somebody took over the second floor and put a big fireplace and meeting area in their own apartment. And so that happened over and over and over again, to the point where by the 50s, a lot of these rooms had been changed over to apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And then the
but
last...
But there still was the restaurant in the 50s.
There still was. The restaurant... It changed over, called The Grid, back in, I think, the early 30s was designed. And then it changed over. There was an Italian restaurant then later in the same space back in the 50s, I think, 50s and 60s. But as the old space that was Firehouse Books, as we went through demolition, we uncovered four different layers of older structures and older construction, and pulling and peeling back the onion, as we call it, to find out what was originally there. It had quite a story to tell.
All right. Well, you're putting a lot of time and effort into the redevelopment of this building. Why do you think it's so important to maintain this building for the Main Street Business District?
There's a lot of documentation across the country about how the urban core of most towns have what they call the donut effect. The older section of town tends to slowly die out, and the stores want to get bigger. They move to the outside of town, the Walmart scene, things like that. And you'll find that a lot of communities will have really struggles to keep Main Streets and their downtown areas thriving and alive. That hasn't really been the case here in Ames. It did for a while, but it seems to be that the Main Street Cultural District and stuff is working pretty well. The building that is the Sheldon Munn, being such a dominant structure, is one that, if it were to continue on its current path, would have actually been a negative pull on the district itself, because it was at a juncture where it was going to see some major structural damage happening because of water infiltration over time. And that, type of thing has to be fixed or it was not going to survive as a building. And if you take something of that size out of Main Street, if you don't fix it, it has to come down. Any building like that, it's either repaired or removed. And if it was going to be removed, we would not have been able to replace it at all. Mm. And with that would have had a lasting effect on the entire feeling of the downtown fabric and of Ames at all if we were able to lose
given the square footage.
Well, and the importance of it. I mean, Main Street in any town is important, but really for Ames, that's still our heartbeat. Mm-hmm. That is still where we consider our home base. Now, most people may say, I live over here. I live, Somerset and other places, and they're all beautiful places. Mm-hmm. But the original heartbeat of the town is still down in Main Street, and, mm-hmm. and everybody understands that. And this is what is keeping it.
There's a lot of events happening. The farmers market is a classic one, but there's a lot more happening than just that.
And it really seems to be taking a resurgence. Used to be – now, I lived close to downtown for some 30 years myself, and as I used to walk through with my kids, we used to say after 5, everybody shuttered their doors, and it was gone, and it was quiet. And that's not really the case now. You can mm-hmm. go walk down the sidewalks, Main Street, pretty much any night now, and there's activity. Mm-hmm. There's an urban feeling to it, and that's something that people want to be a part of, and we're hoping that that continues because as we redevelop the Shelterman, we're hoping people want to rent there and be a part of the urban fabric that we're helping to create.
You recently got a grant for redeveloping from the state of Iowa.
Yes.
Tell us about the grant and what it's trying to do.
Well, the Main Street Cultural District received this grant, which is a grant possibility. It's actually produced by the Iowa Economic Development Authority as a challenge grant process so that any of the communities within the state of Iowa can help benefit and reestablish, refurbish existing fabric. This grant we applied for this summer, $75,000, we specifically targeted to help us redo the facades of the main floor areas. If you were to walk down the street today and look at
the retail shops.
If you were to walk down the street today and look at the retail shops on the Shelterman face, you'll notice there's a lot of them have plywood coverings on them. All of the windows and doors, they were all redesigned in the 50s to be more inviting, and they all angle back into the building a little bit, etc. A lot of that, it's all single glazed. It's falling onto disrepair. The plywood needs to be replaced. The substructure underneath actually has some real issues, and the whole entablature is leaking into the basement. And that is creating some very, very serious structural damage that we have to repair.
Water is a problem to any building.
It is. It really is.
What are your plans for the building? How would you summarize it? let's talk about the retail space and the non-retail space.
How do you summarize a month-long story?
Okay.
The plans right now, we ended up, and I say we, I'm a part of a development group. People call me the owner. Not really. I'm just happen to be the face of the one that's walking up and down the sidewalk. We ended up with this building and are really trying to mitigate some of the damage and to reestablish, to set it on its path.
Mm-hmm.
A full restoration actually will continue probably after we're done. What we're trying to do is to, at first, and we broke it when we applied for the grant, we talked about several phases of work. We broke it into phases so that we can at least grasp it, get our arms wrapped around it. The first phase was to go back into the existing apartments, and most of the apartments were redesigned for Section 8 housing back in the 70s, early mid-70s
All
or
right.
so. And that was when really the
affordable housing.
Affordable housing, and which is good. We like that. That was when the front doors were locked for secure entrances, et cetera, and no one longer was able to walk in and look at the main lobby and be a part of the building. Well, over time, every space, and I know there are developers in this town, some of my best friends are such, they will tell you you have to maintain anything, mm-hmm. Your own home,
yep.
Everything like that, and especially apartments that you rent. Need constant maintenance.
Right.
Well, this building really didn't receive a lot of that maintenance. It was kept in place, but it was not maintained as a structure over a long term. Now you have to realize that construction is, well, that's obviously something I understand very well. It has different layers and levels. When you're talking about a downtown building, it is the most expensive place to build,
yeah.
and the most expensive place to maintain. Most of your apartments that you see being built around town, they're all using wood frame construction and vinyl siding on the outside, good windows, et cetera. And they'll replace the carpet and they'll repaint the rooms and they call it good.
Are you trying to make the apartments affordable housing? You're trying to do something what they did to the school.
We're not trying to do either, but really just to maintain. We're trying to bring them back to market rate housing. What that means is we're really sprucing up the apartments. This was the epitome of good construction when it was built.
Mm-hmm.
It was claimed as the fireproof structure of the town.
All right.
And such. And so it's more... a little more difficult to build than and to work on than a regular wood frame house. We have what is considered a type 1 construction. That means it's all concrete. Concrete columns, concrete walls, concrete structure. And all to make matters even more interesting, to make the space feel more regal when they designed it, especially first and second, third and floors, they would wrap all of the infrastructure, the piping and the electrical and such, into the columns as it progressed from the basement up through.
Oh, my.
And that was wonderful back in 1915, and it worked fine for the first 50 years or so.
Right.
But as the pipes started to degrade and to fail, then we have to repair those. And that, of course, creates the problem because not only are they hard to find because they're hidden in the columns. You can't reach them, et cetera. Plus the fact that the remodeling did what it could. When you took not a total redesign, but a haphazard redesign over a 50-year period of individual rooms into a different apartments,
right. There
isn't anything that stacks. Usually you think, well, I've got three floors of apartments over a commercial that if I'm looking on the second floor, the third floor should look kind of like the second and the fourth. But no, they don't. And they, of course, now that all the apartments have bathrooms, how did the piping get to the bathroom?
Oh, my gosh. And you don't have any design architectural plans that help you find those things?
Oh, no. We've been this is the sleuth part of it. We've been going through and trying to find all of this. But the only way to get water to the new bathroom over in apartment 5, for example, is that they ran a big pipe from the basement all the way to the roof, scattered it across. Because, see, the top part of Shelter Mine has a 4-foot attic across the entire space. And so up in the attic, they ran the pipe into the attic for all the water, and then they traced it back down through different walls and crevices and corners and closets. And so if you happen to rent an apartment on the second floor, the water for your bathroom may have gone from the room next door. It might come from the room above. It might come across the hall. We've had a plumbing contractor working on the Shelter Mine now for almost a year, and he's still not sure where all the pipes are. And he will repair them as they can. And when the old galvanized water pipes, they solidify over time. And so all of a sudden we have to replace them. And so we're replacing them as we can.
Hearing you talk about this, John, it seems like I hear the passion and the excitement in your voice. In some ways, it's a work of frustration, but it's also a work of love.
Oh, you talk about passion. I get the calls almost every day where, I guess we need to shut the water off. So why is it? Well, that cast iron system that is feeding all the sewer lines and stuff, well, you realize cast iron only has about a 90-year life. It's 100 years. And so it's failed. We opened up this apartment this morning because it had an odor, an aroma type of thing. Well, you open it up, and in the back side of the wall, here is a 6-foot chunk of vertical pipe that feeds 3 floors above. Everybody's stuff is coming down this pipe. And the pipe is split open from the outside. And so it's sitting there wide open inside the wall cavity. You open up the wall, and it is full. And so you try to figure out, what am I going to do with this? Well, there is, you know, the contractor looks at me, what do I do about this? I said, what do you do about this? It's pretty simple. You start in, you clean it up, and we start over. And so we've been doing that on almost a daily basis, discovering, changing, fixing, and putting it right.
We've been talking to John Lott, who is trying to redevelop the Sheldon Munn building and experiencing all sorts of interesting problems on a daily basis, trying to fix up the apartments and make them inhabitable again. Any final comments you'd like to share with us, John?
Well, as people start to watch, what we've been doing so far has been pretty quiet because you see the dumpster outside and we're working inside. As we enter the next phase, going into replacing the facades, that will become a lot more public because we'll be peeling the face off and putting it back, and everybody will start to watch. And it'll be fun. Enjoy and let us know what you think as we get along.
Thank you, John, for coming today and sharing us what you're trying to do.
Okie doke. Talk to you soon.
If you're joining us, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Radio 89.1, serving Ames and Story City. I'm your host today, Jim Werbel. How many of you have heard about Sigler Companies? Many of you probably think of it as a printing company. I learned a lot of unexpected things about Sigler in a recent visit there. I talked with Beth Cross, who's the president of Sigler, and I met numerous employees there who will share their perceptions about Sigler. I'd like to welcome Beth Cross to the show, who is the president of Sigler Companies.
Thank you. We're delighted to tell our story today.
I thought Sigler was a printing company. But as I was waiting to come in and see you, I was looking through one of your brochures, and it seems like you do much more than just printing nowadays. What does Sigler do exactly?
Sigler is still a printing company. We do a lot of print from small runs to large quantity runs for our customers. We do printing, but we also have apparel production, embroidery and screen printing. Promotional items are a big part of what we do. We source and produce promotional items, and we have a large fulfillment area. So we're doing special kitting and fulfillment for customers all across the country. In addition to all that, we have a design studio where we do graphic design for print and apparel and promotional items. And we also have a web programming department, which develops online stores for our customers. Well, we started as a printing company in 1958 and grew substantially, particularly from 1990 till 2010. We had rapid growth. We were focused on printing, and we did lots of direct mail, lots of large format printing. And by that, I mean we did brochures, books, magazines. I mentioned direct mail. We did millions of pieces of direct mail a month. We still do that, but as printing has changed over the years, we've done different types of printing.
You've expanded over the years then.
2006, we acquired a 25-year-old apparel and print and merchandise company. And we did that because so many of our clients were, in addition to using print to get their message out, they were also using apparel or brand and merchandise to get their messages out. So, for instance, a company may decide that they want to do a full-fledged campaign, marketing campaign. And in that campaign, they want printed material that tells about their company, but they also would use apparel or branded merchandise to be able to tell their story to their customers.
Could you give me an example of a company that you work with closely?
I think a great description of a client who uses all of our services is Two Men in a Truck. Two Men in a Truck, everyone thinks, is a local company, a moving company that is just in their hometown. And actually, Two Men in a Truck is one of the fastest growing franchises in the nation. And Two Men in a Truck is located in Lansing, Michigan. They have almost 400 franchise locations across the country. And what we do for Two Men in a Truck, which will explain how our whole company works, is we have had a four-year relationship with Two Men and a Truck. We do all of their uniforms for all of their movers. So every mover who works for Two Men and a Truck across the nation and internationally wears uniforms that are produced here at Sigler. In addition to uniforms, we're also doing uniforms and office apparel, their corporate apparel for their home office. All of their estimators who are going out and estimating jobs wear Two Men and a Truck apparel. So they are using not only us to supply their uniforms, but they're using us for corporate wear. In addition to that, they have a very aggressive direct mail, which we produce here on our presses. So we are doing direct mail to help them find new customers and also engage existing customers for additional moves that they may have. So we're doing their branding. We're doing all of their forms. We do all of their brochures. Their company-wide marketing collateral is all produced here. All of that marketing collateral, all of that apparel, all of those uniforms are put into our fulfillment center, and each franchise will then go on to an online portal that we have designed and developed here, and each franchise will order the number of uniforms or corporate apparel or marketing collateral that they need for their franchise.
I took a tour of Sigler Companies with Beth, and during that time, I talked to some employees about the things that they do. We'll see how well those activities match up with what Beth says Sigler Companies does.
So you're all the creative people. Is that what you are?
Nice to meet you. Today we're doing Christmas cards, banner ads, calendar, for websites.
I work on all types of corporate events. I'm currently actually just starting to do some planning for next year's Farm Progress Show. I'm not sure if you've heard of that, but we do have a client that participates in the Farm Progress Show, and we help them with all of their presence at the show.
I'm doing some pre-press work for one of our customers, and I'm getting it set up to go on the press. Customer is Inner Workings, and they're getting a envelope printed that we're going to then have one of our vendors convert into envelopes.
What happens when there's a delay and the customer doesn't get it when they thought they'd get it? What do you do?
We either try and get it rerouted or apologize and drive it ourselves.
Have you ever done that?
Yeah, many a times. We actually hopped on a plane to Atlanta, Georgia one time to get goods to a trade show.
I understand that Sigler has some what people would call progressive business practices. Would you please describe some of the progressive business practices that exist at Sigler Companies?
Well, we try to really embrace every day the values of our company. And I know a lot of people talk about company values, and a lot of times those company values are decided by a management team or a leadership team in an organization. But our values were established by our coworkers, and our coworkers came together and really focused on what are the things that are going to guide us every day to get the job done. And so we empower all of our coworkers to live those values, not only in the work that they do, but in their work with each other. So we do a lot of things to promote appreciation, I think is the best way to describe it. We have an internal program called SCORE, and that's Sigler Companies Recognizing Excellence. It's something that we started, our coworkers started back in 1999, and it still lives on today. So we cheer each other on. And by that, we have certificates that we write each day to each other. You get 5 points for thanking a coworker for something they've done or recognizing excellence. And you get 5 points for recognizing your coworker. We try to promote that because we really believe that cheering each other on and being appreciative for the work that we do, not only for our customers, but with each other, is important. At the end of the day, when you receive a compliment from a coworker, goes a long way to making you motivated and wanting to come to work the next day and wanting to do a great job. At the end of each month, you can take your points and you can redeem those points for company apparel or merchandise, and that promotes company pride. So you'll see when you walk around our company, you'll see a lot of people that are wearing company apparel or carrying a company bag with our logo on it. And those are things that they've all been able to get from their points from coworkers recognizing their work. Everyone here works as a team. And by that, I mean, we work with each customer to form a team to support them. Every person on that team has ownership of how that project gets done for a client. Take, for instance, Two Men in a Truck and our uniforms that we do for them. It may start in design with designing the logo on where it's going to go on the apparel. It may be a special occasion that they're recognizing. For instance, maybe a franchise has won an award. So our designers may design apparel that we're producing in production. But everyone who touches that job throughout our entire shop has ownership over that. So if something moves through and we're looking at the project as it's being done and it doesn't look right, we say to each and every one of our coworkers, you have the power to stop the job.
Beth described some of the progressive business practices that exist at Sigler. Let's hear from some of the employees what they said about Sigler's business practices in terms of treating its employees.
The best part about Sigler is the people. And we're like a family. We just, every day is teamwork and care and compassion for one another and our clients. And it's just a great environment and place to be.
Again, the people that we work with, the great teamwork that we all have, and everybody just really pulls together and does a great job.
And thank all your wonderful employees for helping you out throughout the day. If you're having a hard time, just give them a thanks. It kind of boosts everybody's spirits.
Everybody else can hand out to another employee that has each one of our values on them. So you can specifically thank someone for all their gratitude, their leadership, and then they get 10 points to use on our awesome score store to get stuff that we embroider and screen print on.
Liz Sherry, why don't you say what you've been recognized for?
Okay, recognized for optimism, for coming here with my background, and I was told it was great for us and always willing to help find solutions to problems with jobs. Engagement, willingness to ask questions and tackle new opportunities and challenges. And then innovation, working diligently with a client and to help develop a new product for their package.
It seems like the person that gave you the award, they're signing it themselves?
Yes, they do.
You've been with Sigler 21 years, Jason. Why do you stay working for Sigler?
I love the environment, and I love the hours, and I love a lot of things about the place this place, such as the employees, the work hours, the closeness to my home. I only live like two blocks away, so those are really big perks for me.
One of the things, Jim, that we try to do as a company is we realize the importance of family. We all have families. We all recognize that, you know, family time is important, and so we try to really work with each one of our coworkers so that they can have family time, they can get home and take care of their families and do what they need to do. So Jason has two children, and he likes to be there at the end of the day for them, and we want him to be, but we also include families in a lot of the things that we do.
Like, the CEO and CFO knows everyone here. That's the good thing about Sigler. Like, it's rare to find a company where the owner and the boss walks around and knows every employee's name and speak to everyone. And it's just more of a family environment instead of a work environment. And everyone here is dedicated, loyal, and they take pride in everything they do. And that's why we have such a great team and great people to work with.
I've been talking to Beth Cross, who's the president of Sigler Companies. How did you get into this position as president, Beth?
I started in 1998 to create a company called Innova, which was a graphic design agency that was actually located on Main Street in Ames. We also had a location in Des Moines, and I worked to start that company with two other people who were here in our company at the time. And Innova was the name of the agency. And yes, we are very proud of Innova, and it had a great run We closed Innova in 2012, and it was really an effort to try to consolidate all of our different departments into this beautiful building that we're in now. So Innova really became Sigler Design Studio. So Innova still exists in many ways because a lot of our Innova designers and copywriters came here to Sigler and we created Sigler Design Studio.
Any final comments you'd care to share with us, Beth?
One of the things that I think people maybe don't realize the names is that since we've moved from Main Street where Innova was, and Sigler used to be on Northwestern at the end of Main Street, is that we came out here to this beautiful building by the airport and the research park to consolidate all of our growth. We had five different locations all around Ames, and we were spending a lot of time running from one location to another, and coming out here to this building really made our jobs much easier. We could focus on our quality and really working together. So this move out to the south side of Ames just really helped our company grow. And while we're really proud that we have been able to grow substantially and have clients all across the country now, we really think of Ames as our home. And we still do a lot of work for local Ames businesses, other Story County businesses. We have people come in every day who are just wanting to order. Perhaps they're just wanting to order business cards, or they're wanting to have their T-shirts for an event or for a family reunion. We do small projects, but we do large projects for companies, but we do everything in between. So we're still here. We're still an Ames company, where we're really proud of that. Started in 1958 as a small company, and now we've been able to grow and employ a lot of people who live in Story County, and we're really proud of that.
You could be located in a bigger urban area rather than Ames. I'm curious why you choose to keep Sigler Companies located in Ames.
Ames has been very good to us, and it's a great place to do business. We have a lot of great Ames businesses who support us, from Iowa State to lots of small and large businesses in Ames. It's conveniently located. Our sales team travels all over the country, but they all live here. The cost of doing business is really great here. We're able to do our business. And honestly, the best thing is we are able to attract wonderful, wonderful people to work here who all live in surrounding communities and in Ames. And our coworkers are everything to us because they get the job done.
Thank you very much for taking time to talk with us, Beth. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for taking time to visit with us. We're very proud to be here and proud to be part of the community.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I have been your host, Jim Werbel. I started the show with Dan Culhane and Angie Dornkamp from the Ames Chamber of Commerce to explain workinames.com job board and other employee recruitment efforts. We talked to John Lott, the owner of the Sheldon Munn Building, telling us about the importance of the building and all the issues that he has to deal with regentrification of that building, a big challenge that he's facing. We then heard from Beth Cross, the president of Sigler Companies, and numerous employees who work there about their jobs at Sigler Companies. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. today. You can listen to today's Local Talk show or any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoi, Heart of Iowa, fm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. You can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feeds. Local Talk has been engineered again by Jonah DeGeest. Thank you, Jonah. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard today was from Wild Asparagus' CD, The Call of the Wild.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, we can always use more reporters. It's lots of fun, trust me. Contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends, and remember that your participation as a listener and your generous contributions, we do have a pledge drive coming up, are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to seeing you again on the radio.